it's me, Mange. I'm here. I'm back, and I'm a lesbian, and I'm proud, and I'm obese. I've got my heater on. It's very cold here in Chicago today, and I've got my phone on. It's sending me all kinds of important notifications, and I also can trance. I've got some. I've got a lot, actually. Not that much. Hi. Hi, everyone. It's me, Madge. Did I already say that? So I want to read some letters. Well, maybe letter. Let me look at my emails. Am I recording? Let me make sure I'm recording. Let me check to make sure I'm recording. Am I recording? Am I recording? Am I recording? Hello. Let's see. What do I have? I'm a lesbian. I have food allergies and I'm obese. That's what I have. I have obesity, food allergies, and lesbianism, I suppose. Got all three. I've got all three going on with me. I can't find my mail. I guess I'll try the other computer because I don't know where it loaded. I'm turning into my mother. I don't know where it I'm just complaining about electronics on Reddit. That's my new thing. Complaining about technology. Every little thing that goes wrong with technology gets reported by me on Reddit. And it's fun. Everybody who talks about certain electronics, whether it's the Vizio or the Sonos or the Roku, everybody who goes and talks about it on Reddit, they're all OCD. Everybody is OCD. And if the slightest thing doesn't work, you have to freak out about it and scream. And I like that. I like that for me. I enjoy doing that. I enjoy complaining and screaming. And I'm a lesbian. And I have food allergies. And everything's amazing for that. Right. Where am I? Oh, yeah, I was going to read that email. Let me go into my flagged messages. Got to go to the dentist today. Been putting it off long enough, but I think I have the beginnings of an abscess, but I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't want to talk about it unless you're a dentist. If you want a dentist, then DM me on some system. I can't even tell people how to communicate with me anymore because there's so much social media. The whole thing is just hopeless. It's all just a big garbage land and idiocracyville and horribleness, QAnon. Everything's terrible. Let's see, flag messages. No, we don't want to talk about that. Woo-hoo, that was close. Let's see, okay. Where's the message from my surgeon? Paper surgery. This is from paper surgery. And I just want to read a nice message from her. I hope it's okay to read this publicly, but I thought it'd be nice. She sent me a message last month, and I lost it, so I feel bad, so I'm going to read it out loud. I hope that's okay, paper surgery, my surgeon. Hello, Madge. How are you doing? I heard about Tampon Tammy, and I wanted to express my condolences to her, to you, her dear friend. Most of the times I disagreed with her opinions, especially on politics, but I can totally relate to the idea of suicide. I don't know her situation, besides what she mentioned herself on the radio. Well, that's pretty much it. But sometimes the pain is enough for one person to cope with. I'm not at all religious. I think we're entitled to our own lives. We own it. It was my positive thought for many years when someone is so miserable, so lost, the idea that at least he or she has the freedom and the power to put an end to suffering is kind of a relief. It was for me, at least. Unfortunately, during my life, I've seen many friends giving up and just throw their lives in any self-destruction activities or just jump from the window. And I always thought I'm no one to judge, and it's useless to feel guilty. No one can be saved if they don't want to. What I feel from listening to your podcast is that she really trusted your friendship, that you were really close friends. How are you doing? Do you have someone to take care of you? To talk to in this shitty moment right now? Well, I'm married. I'm sorry if I write a bunch of banalities. I just wanted to give you a virtual hug. A big kiss, Madge, your surgeon. hearts. And then it says, I will follow another email about other topics, not all happier, I'm afraid, as the world politics, COVID, Netherlands, LGBTQI, world activism, drag business, AIDS. All fun things to talk about. I love that you've taken your time out of all of your paper surgery to write me an email. I really do appreciate that. That's so nice, so lovely, so sweet. And then we have a wonderful email next from the one and only Rogers Malls. And I'm really excited. I hope it's still evergreen, as they say, because it's been probably over a week since I got it. But, you know, it's been hard for me to get back to usual. I'm trying not to use I just saw an email. I'm in my VIP email, and I saw your VIP, Serge. I saw an email from a recruiter from some job I didn't get last year. It was really upsetting because I worked really hard to get it, but I don't know what went wrong in the end. They never tell you. So it's probably because of, you know, me. Probably me. Anyway, this is all fiction. Okay, so let's see here. Flagged. Where's my Roger? Oh, because I searched for surgeon. That's why. I can take that out of the thus and so. Let's see. Matt Taibbi. Here it is. Okay. The topic of this, longtime listeners might recognize the name Sylvain Maldoun, who is, in fact, the subject of this email. I mean, literally, the subject line. Dearest Madge, this week my spirit guide is Kevin Twatt, a mage who died in a motorbike accident in 1621. He suggested that I contact you to see if you're keeping your end up. I've been waiting to email you, as I thought it would be inappropriate to contact whilst American were having such a crazy time, what with the revolution and everything. Every time I went to email you thinking that Donald Trump couldn't do anything more dumb, he did it. I know you are very sensitive about things, understandably. Do you know what I think the news should have done? Probably not, but I'll tell you. Every time Donald Trump did something stupid, racist, homophobic, hate-filled, or moronic, people, the news, reported it wrong. Quote, oh, that Trump, he wants to use nuclear weapons to divert hurricanes, announced the newscasters. Quote, Donald Trump recommends drinking bleach to kill COVID, say the headlines. Instead, they should have reported that the Republican Party suggested drinking bleach kills COVID, or the Republican Party thinks Mexicans are rapists. Every time one of these announcements was made, it would have the effect of Republicans not wanting to be associated with stupid statements, leading to them saying, this man doesn't represent me, growing a pair, then kicking him out. Anyone wearing a mega hat, Roger said, mega hat. I guess that's the same, right? A mega hat. I used to know a girl in college. She had a big high hair, and we called her mega hair. Well, I called her mega hair because she had a mega hair. Anyone wearing a mega hat to the office would have been teased on a daily basis, making them fed up and question their loyalty. Hey, Cletus, I hear your Republican Party thinks that we need global warming because winters are too cold, and I hear you want to bang your daughter. Eventually, Trump would have lost a lot of support from the Republicans, leading only to the minority of stupid supporters with horns, tactical vests, and pointy white hats. That's what I think, anyway. But it's 4 years too late, and he's gone now. That's right, Roger. Great ideas, I suppose. Not sure I agree with them, but it is over. I do agree with that. My other idea would have been... Oh, we're not done with the ideas. My other idea would have been to broadcast every White House press conference in grainy black and white, mute Donald Trump's microphone, play the sound of a hysterical German shouting, and then only show captions of what he's saying. Not a bad idea. This would make every press conference look like a documentary about a dictator as he shared his views about flight bans, building walls, and people who aren't white. I'm very happy that Joe Biden is in power. He seems to know what he's doing. I turned his opening ceremony on halfway through to see a costumed woman do sign language, which I originally mistook for watching a TikTok dance. When Garth Brooks performed, I wished I was properly deaf. I know you prefer Bernie Sanders, but at least he's a meme now. Shame his policies aren't. That's the truth. But the main thing, Trump has lost his voice on Twitter. The main thing is Trump has lost his voice on Twitter, so doesn't pose any more danger. There are only two online platforms left which he isn't barred from, TikTok and OnlyFans. Madge, if you had to choose only one platform, which would you like him to use? With TikTok, he'd have access to a younger audience of impressionable minds so that he might be bad. I suppose OnlyFans could generate him some revenue from his supporters, but he'd have to smear his orange todger into a webcam. What's a todger? Let me Google that. Todger. It rhymes with Roger, and I know that. The human penis? Huh. Huh. How about that? A new word for penis in English and I didn't even know about it? Huh. Well, that's really something. That might be the best thing that's happened to me all week, and it's only Monday. Maybe it's going to be a good week this week. Keep up the stirring work and all that you do. Yours in yeast, Roger's Moles. Thanks, Roger. In Israel... I just read that they have a new nasal spray that's doing very well with COVID. And they tested on 30 people and they all got cured from the COVID. It's not a vaccine, though. It's just something else. It's a spray. So the thing is, audience, so I have a nice recording I want to play for you. So, you know, I record this gram called, Pod Save the Queens, which you should listen to. In fact, you really should, because if we don't get good feedback, we're just going to stop it, because we're almost done with season one, where we basically deconstruct The Crown, the television series with the lesbians, and you're going to like it. But after this last episode that we recorded last Thursday, about 4 days ago, we had a nice discussion sort of all about a lot of things. I'm not going to tell you what, because it's on this show. Unless if it's not when I say it is, then it's because we decided not to play it, because it does stir the pot a bit, I have to say. So you'll want to hear it. But if you ever want to learn more about why I quit, why I canceled my fan group, and why I quit Facebook for a time, and all this drama with Cheryl, if you want to hear about all that, then stay tuned for that. But I just wanted to mention a couple of items first that were in the news. I made notes. Let's see. Let me do my checkbox. Roger, email, check. Enable sorting. Now I want to tell when to sort. Paper surgery, email, check. I don't want to say her name, but that lady with the big dumb face who's been in the news a lot... I guess I can say her initials, MTG. So I'm conflicted about this because she's a complete idiot, but at the same time, I saw Stacey posted on some ratings of CNN comparing the week before he left office ended, whatever you call it. He ended his term and after. And CNN ratings went down something like 45%, and other networks went down considerably, though not by as much. Like Fox went down, MSNBC went down, but CNN went down by the most. So they clearly need another bogeyman in order. I don't know if it's pronounced bogeyman or just said whatever. So I really feel like the media is, I hate the media, it's such a stupid term to just lump everything together, but I feel like they need desperately to replace Trump in the news to get ratings. And I watched The View. Oh, for fuck's cunt. I watched The View, and The View is, they're always, like, nothing is current. It's all about either this MTG person or the Trump stuff. The Trump, what do you call that? The censure or the impeachment and the Senate trial and all that crap. It's all about that. It's all about those. They're desperate for ratings. So, a lot of this MTG stuff is just for ratings. And the problem is you're giving her a platform. And I just see a lot of the same pattern with Trump that made him famous and gave him so much power. But at the same time, it really is a threat to have such horrible, a horrible person there. So this person needs to be dealt with properly. But I feel like the way she's being dealt with is basically just as a way to get television ratings, which is also going to give her more power. So I don't like what's happening there. Okay. Now, this is really interesting. So I just saw this posted on Intercepted, the group, which is, I love that show, Intercepted. Well, I used to love it. And I don't know what happened when Glenn Greenwald quit. Something went, I think Jeremy Scahill got really depressed. They used to produce an amazing podcast once a week. Now it's just kind of pod faded and very depressing, which is kind of cool to see in a high profile podcast, but bad for, yeah, I mean, it was a great show. I don't know what the fuck happened, and there's no real explanation. I mean, all you can do is read between the lines that their editor just went full on neoliberal and just fucked everyone. Betsy Reed. I mean, how can you trust anyone named Betsy? Betsy. That's a doll. I'm Betsy, and I'm an editor. Mm-hmm, right. And the whole reality winner thing, some nasty shit happened, and nobody's being honest about it. And it just feels shady. But anyway, in this fan group, or listen to it group, I just saw a post earlier today. It says, these are currently the top stories on Reddit, the subreddit politics. With all the of the headlines proclaiming the GOP to be radicalized, aggressors, enemies of democracy, etc., you should be asking yourself one thing. Why does the Democratic Party continue to work with the GOP? If they are as radical and anti-democratic as the media is claiming, either the media is vastly overstating a threat or the Dems are vastly underestimating one. Either way, something is very wrong here. So I'll just read what the headlines are. These are the top headlines on the subreddit of politics. I'm sorry that everything's beeping. I don't know how to turn everything off. I'm just too old. I'm too old. And I can't turn anything off, and I got to go to the dentist, and it's stressful. Okay, shut that one off. Let me just fucking, do not disturb me, okay? Any of you, computers, phones, why can't it just do not disturb because I'm grummy? Why doesn't it just know that, right? Oh, and then I lost the login on my other thing. Hold on. I hope I don't say my password out loud. That would be awful. Maybe you can tell what I'm typing by my clicks, which is fine. Let's see here. Where am I? Okay. So these are the top headlines on the Reddit sub. Why is it so hard for me to say politics subreddit? Did I turn off my do not? Yeah, I did. The Republican Party is radicalizing against democracy. That's from the Atlantic. In America's uncivil war, Republicans are the aggressors. GOP senator attempts to blame Nancy Pelosi, not Trump, for the Capitol riots as impeachment looms. Why I, as a lifelong conservative, now call Republicans enemies of democracy. Donald Trump should be convicted unanimously by secret ballot. John Fetterman launches Senate bid in Pennsylvania. Ilhan Omar warns progressives will revolt if Dems poison relief bill by curbing eligibility for $1,400 checks. Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor announces Senate bid opinion. The GOP is not a normal party. Trump impeachment trial. Most Americans think the former president should be convicted and barred from office. Support for Trump's conviction is overwhelming among Democrats, with the 92% in favor. And then for The Guardian, first thing, Trump could face criminal investigation over the Capitol siege. So you can see what's happening here is they're trying to get clicks. They're trying to get ratings. I think that's pretty clearly what it is. So regardless of, yeah, okay, so they're trying to, so I think what the poster was talking about is, you know, you have sort of a cognitive dissonance here, because on one hand, you do have Republicans and Democrats trying to work together, but on the other hand, the rhetoric is so polarized. Yeah. So in other words, if you are really as anti-democratic as you claim, then why are you working with them at all? Which is a really good question. So what I think is, I wonder, so we have something rare, which is a Democratic president, Democratic House, Democratic Senate, albeit it's a horrible margin. We can get rid of the filibuster rule. From everything I understand, it's a good idea to do it, considering the dynamics and the politics and the numbers with the Democrats. We need to do it. Get rid of the filibuster and take action and get a whole bunch of shit done. Namely, Medicare for All. We could do it right now. We have it. And I'm not dealing, you know, you're talking about this bullshit the what do you call that amount? The stipend or whatever, the stimulus amount for the people. This is silly. He promised $2,000. Just give it to us. Don't pretend you don't have the vote. See, that's the bullshit. And I listen, you know, people will say nasty things about Glenn Greenwald to make him the bogeyman, right? But I listened to a really interesting interview of him. And if you actually sit down and listen to the man who's a very respected and Pulitzer Prize running reporter, and listen to his listen to him discussing, and there was a really good episode of Useful Idiots, maybe, I think it was in November, where they interview him, Useful Idiots podcast. And he explains why, what, there was a moment, I believe it was like 2005 or so, when he realized that he was just, that the Democratic Party was just bullshitting him, and that it was what they were presenting was all lies, and that's why he turned away from them. And he is angry at the Democratic Party very much, but he's not a Republican by any means. But he has very specific reasons for it. So I think a lot of people just want to say, oh, it's Russia. Well, that whole Russian narrative has kind of been, you know, turned into, you know, exposed as conspiracy theory. But regardless of that, if you just listen to the reasons why he left the Democratic Party, at least for me, it shed a lot of light on the whole situation, not just with him, but, and basically what it is when Democrats have power, they still don't implement the things that it's their constituents want. For example, Medicare for All. And the way they do it, because the donors don't want it. The donors are the ones who control the Democratic Party, i.e. big insurance, big pharma, etc. So they'll campaign to win the votes, like they're going to do Medicare for All and they're going to, you know, get really insurance for everyone. But in reality, they can't do it because it'll turn off their big donors. So what they do is they just say they can't get the votes. So, and the people that vote against these kind of things are always, you know, they rotate. So they can't always, you know, it can't be, like with the Republicans, you always have Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski voting against the grain. But with the Democrats, they always choose different people to vote against the popular policy so that they can all sort of spread it around. And what Glenn Greenwald, and what turned him off to it, is he realized it's all just bullshit, that the Democrats, as a party, they don't do what people want, what their constituents want, because they have to do what the donors want, the people with the money. And they don't want Medicare for All, and they don't want a lot of these policies. And I think it's important to understand that. I'd strongly recommend listening to that podcast for Useful Idiots in sometime in November, Glenn Greenwald. Just Google those terms. So, very interesting, right, audience? I think it is. Don't you? I do. Don't you? Oh, there's no feedback. Yeah. So, and then, I mean, but then, on, you know, when you look at what the Republicans are doing, it's just fucking awful, too. So, I like the idea of the Republicans splitting, you know, because it does seem to be turning into the Trump Party and the sort of more traditional conservative party. You know, and so I think they pointed out in Meet the Press yesterday, that the hosts, that isn't it strange that Liz Cheney is being censured for opposing a conspiracy theory, yet MJT is not being censured and in fact being praised for supporting a conspiracy theory. Very interesting stuff. Very dangerous, right? But I'm in favor of them splitting, but I think if they're going to split, Democrats should split too. Let's have, I mean, what a great excuse to get. We need more parties. They were lamenting this the other on The View today, saying like, oh, does this mean we might have we might actually split? We'll lose our two-party system, like it's so great. My God, why would anybody want to keep a two-party system? So yes, I hope they split. And to make it fair, we should split too. Not to make it fair, who cares? But, you know, the neo-libs, they can have their garbage, their Pete Buttigieg garbage. And then we'll take Bernie and AOC. And well, AOC is a bit, she's still thinking she can pull an Obama and just get everyone together. She thinks she can change the Democrats to be more progressive. I think it's a losing battle. We need to separate and have a real progressive party. And then the neo-libs can stand on their own, and the neoconservatives can stand on their own, and then the populist right wing can be the Trumpies, crazies, and have four parties. Yeah, I think it sounds great. I think it'd be great for America. Let's see. And then there's this business about, you know, I was really embarrassed for us, AOC and Rashida Tlaib, for crying on the, all over the place. I mean, why, really? I mean, I get that you're trying to be vulnerable, but this isn't Drag Race. It's America. You know, you're the fucking government. We don't really need to see you crying about stuff to get your clicks. That was just embarrassing, you know? You know, if you want to be useful, instead of crying on your video, why don't you get Medicare for All? Because I don't see how you're going to get Medicare for All when you're busy crying about being raped or whatever. You know, I'm sorry, go to a therapist. But it's not my business, and it's embarrassing enough to watch, okay? I'm sorry. I have to say this because I don't have an audience. I have nothing to lose, but it's ridiculous. Grow the fuck up, you know? Grow up. Don't sit there and cry like a baby. Get your work done. Get your fucking work done. Don't cry. Medicare for All, not tears. You're the fucking government. You get a lot of money. You get good health care. Do your fucking job. We don't care about your personal shit. It's not about you. It's about us. It's about the American people. So don't sit there and cry about your sexual assault or how awful it was. Yeah, of course, the siege of the Capitol was abhorrent, and Trump should be held accountable. But at the same time, you got work to fucking do. You know, do that shit on the side, but talk about the important stuff, not just crying all the time. What's important right now is getting things done with the rare moment that we have so much potential to change with Democrats having control of the Senate, the House, and the presidency. So let's do that. You could cry at your therapist's office. Fucking crazy. What else? Yeah. Oh, Bitcoin is amazing right now. Everybody should be buying Bitcoin. You really should. Remember, I told you so. I don't talk about it because people always say I'm crazy, but I've been slowly putting money in over time. If you're worried about it, then just put a set amount of money. They call it dollar cost averaging. You can use the Cash App. Oh, I got a code for that somewhere. Oh my God, what's the code for my, because then we both get money. What is the code for my Cash App? Let me see. Oh, how do I invite people? Invite friends. Where the fuck is the thing? Jesus Christ. I don't know. Just, okay, if you want to join the Cash App, just email me, bloatedlesbianjew@gmail.com. Okay, email me and I'll send you my link for the Cash App. But you can use the Cash App, bloatedlesbianjew@gmail. You can also, I say bloatedlesbianjew because bloated lesbian sometimes doesn't work, but you can still send it to both. But yeah, you can set it to do a certain amount every day or every week or every month. And that way, you know, if you're worried about it going down or up over time, you sort of counteract that by dollar cost averaging, by buying the same amount every month. And realistically, it probably will keep going up, but it also might go back down for a while. Who knows? So that way you're covering it in either way. It's conservative financially. Yeah, so let's do that together. The stimulus. So talking about that stimulus, I'm not talking about stimulating my vagina, which I really enjoy when people do that to it. But the stimulus, I mean, why are they negotiating this? Again, we have control. It's okay. I'm okay. I'm leery of giving more money to corporations and, quote, small businesses, which is typically code for big businesses. If it's really small businesses that need it, okay. That's where I means test. Means test corporations. But when you're talking about giving the money to people, you individual taxpayers, you do not need to means test. Give them the maximum amount, $2,000, because that is trickle-up economics. You're giving money into the economy in the most effective way possible. You're not giving it to some rich motherfucker who's going to strip billions off, as they do with every QE, and give it to rich people. You're not giving it to the corporations. You're not giving it as a tax break for rich people. You're giving it directly to people who need the money, or if they don't, they'll invest it in the stock market, or they'll spend it, because you can't make, you can't do anything else with your money in America. You can't put it in a savings account. So you're either going to pump up, you're pumping up the economy in a way that's being filtered through all Americans. It's great. You can't go wrong with that. So just do it. Okay. Or maybe you can go wrong with it. Maybe some economist people would disagree with that. Feel free. But if you're talking about giving it as a stimulus to everyday Americans versus to rich people, definitely to the poor or the normal people, and do not means test. What if I made $200,000 last year and now I'm unemployed? What's the point of the means test? It's bullshit. Lastly, I want to talk about the variant from South America. Had a little argument with Cheryl about this. The thing is, this is a fucking neoliberal. This is why I hate when people like will not say anything bad about Biden, because, you know, it's like I see this the same way people like if you didn't say enough bad stuff about Trump, people would assume you're on his side. And I feel like the same thing's happening. Like if you don't say enough pleasant things about Biden, people will assume you're a Republican now. And a lot of people forget that Trump is gone because they're so PTSD'd about it. Okay. As far as we know, Biden could have stopped the South African variant. Here's what he did. He stopped all immigration from South Africa of non-Americans. So he stopped allowing non-Americans from coming in from South Africa. Great. But the problem is he didn't stop Americans from coming in. So let me ask you, audience, how is the COVID virus going to know the difference or give a shit whether it's attached to an American or a non-American? It doesn't fucking care. So he let the Americans come in with South Africa. And of course, now we have the South African variant, which doesn't work, is not as effective as, and it's very awful for reasons I'm not going to go into. It's horrible. And he didn't fucking, he didn't do shit to stop it. He didn't, I mean, you can make the argument, oh, well, it would have come in anyway, but you can't make that argument because we don't know, because he didn't stop it. He should have quarantined every person who comes in this country from there. Every single fucking person should have been quarantined like they do in Australia. I have this friend, and I won't say her name, but I might try to get her on the show. And she moved to Australia recently because she's immunocompromised from after chemo, cancer survivor and all that. You know, they put her in a quarantine, government mandated quarantine, and secured by the government. You know, like they fucking watch you. You can't leave for, I think, 2 weeks. She had to go through the quarantine, tested every other day before they let you into the city, and then you're free. But then you have freedom. And then I also read recently, I think it was last week, in the city of Perth in Australia, one person tested positive for COVID. It was a guard for one of these quarantine sites. They locked the entire city of Perth down because of one case, in order to stop it, and they stopped it. So, but Americans won't do that. Why? Because freedom, right? Well, that's a fucking bullshit argument. If we're so pro-freedom in America, how come we have the highest rate of incarceration of any fucking country in the world? That's not fucking freedom. And secondly, it's not for, you're talking short-term freedom versus long-term freedom. Because sure, Australians and Chinese too, they gave up short-term freedom by getting quarantined and locked down in these draconian ways, but long-term, they get much more freedom than we do. Plus, they get freedom from disease. Plus, they get health care. The whole thing is fucking dumb. I wish Americans would grow the fuck up and stop and just think for themselves. I don't know. All right, so anyway, that's that. It's been really lovely talking to you one way, audience. And now I'm going to play this nice piece from the Grum the other day, where we discuss lots of things. If I don't play this now, it's because we changed our minds. But hopefully I will. But, you know, in the whole space-time continuum thing, I don't always know when that's going to happen or if I'm going to be able to edit it by.
Can I check on him?
13 inches.
Are we stopping recording?
Yes. Export song to disc. I think this was a really interesting episode that we did today. Yeah. I mean, we went down, you know, some rabbit holes, but I think we were all on our game. Like, we were all very energetic. And
I got some nice feedback in the show, in my little Telegram group for this show. And
oh,
like,
you did? Oh, really? I read it.
What was it?
Just like that queen who's really, you know, likes to talk, the non-binary queen really liked it. They just seem to really like it, saying that they really, I think with, because he's kind of an intellectual, that he probably really likes the deconstruction and the gender talk and all the roles. And I think people like that. It's just, it's hard to get people to, it's hard to get feedback. And part of that is our fault. We don't really have a good way to get feedback. So
yeah, I think iTunes is the best. I mean, like the review system is made.
Yeah, but that's not feedback. That's not like interactive. I like the old way podcasts used to be, when you'd have it on a blog and people would go to the blog.
That's why I like a chat.
Yeah.
You know, like if we do the Eat This Hot Show thing, I love, that's one of my favorite things. Like when I do my little YouTube lives, you know, I love interacting, and even better. Real time?
Oh, I hate that. I hate.
Oh, I love it. Real time. Oh, well, if no. You're comparing it to Golden Circle Chat, which is totally different.
I don't want to hear from the audience while I'm doing a show. No way.
Well, you know, it's different also. You know what? You might be right. Consistent, like if your show versus like what I do or what Reagan does. I guess it is. The chat plays into an effect into the community. So I guess it is totally different.
Every show is a little bit different with the relationship with the audience. Yeah. So like Debbie's YouTube and Twitch audience is very supportive and lovely. And so it's a lot easier to do that sort of live feedback and Debbie works it into the shows that she does. But then when you do stuff like live calls or something, people get like the old school audience that you're used to, Madge, is very aggressive. And I take on those qualities as well when I'm listening, but I think it's also important for Debbie's show because they offer so much direction on creative ways to bring the call, like creative things to do during the call.
But it's a different thing too with like performance. Like, okay, so last night when you're streaming, like I'm trying to, you know, I like doing my little comedy bits. It's like same thing with the VR. If you have instant feedback, it's like, you know, it's just different. I can understand Madge's show or even like the view doesn't go around and say, okay, put the camera on that lady. Yeah, what do you think, hon? Yeah.
It just doesn't work. It's just, I feel like a lot of people feel like they become puppeteers. They want to like see their influence on the show. Like,
oh, totally. See, the GC like, crowd, yes, I agree.
They want to be like, oh, I'm saying this, and therefore it's going to appear in the final product in some way, you know, even if it's just me getting on my nerves, which is probably, you know, a feedback mechanism which was created. I don't know.
It's been, they've been slow cooked for so long, it's condensed down. Reagan could disagree, but I do feel like now we've condensed down to like it's like a toxic sludge half the time.
What really fucked it up for me was the Trump election, because that's what everything.
Yeah, diverged. That ruined everything. It diverged. It really did.
Because everything was, because I wanted, like Reagan talked about last week, I wanted to keep an open mind about it. And then Cheryl was like Russia, 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 and just being very deliberate in her neoliberal accusations. And I couldn't have it. I didn't like where it went. And then the audience became the same way, like they became the Facebook woke social justice mob. And I couldn't.
Heather.
It was all just, and then it's still like that. When I go on, I can't reconnect with that Facebook. And Reagan, you'd mentioned it a couple weeks ago, saying that I was being, something by quitting Facebook. I was, there's a word and I forget what it was.
A thin-skinned?
No. It was like posturing or something. I forget the word you use. It's a common.
Oh, virtue signaling.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. And the thing is, like, I didn't want to continue that argument because I didn't like where it was going. But, like, the reason I quit Facebook is because it made me feel like shit. That's all. You know what I mean? Like, it made me feel like shit. And now
that makes sense to me. But the thing is that, and I didn't see this as an argument. It's more of a, you know, you can have more intense conversations with somebody, but to me, you were wrapping up your departure from Facebook in Facebook is immoral, Facebook is immoral, Facebook is immoral. And that to me became the virtue signaling aspect of it. I
get that, but that was more retroactive, and I understand. I'm sure I gave that impression, but that was more like a retroactive rationalization for what I did. You know, I departed Facebook, so now I'm going to make it useful by making it adhere to my agenda.
Which exactly. I get that. And what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Like, if you feel like you're being attacked somewhere and it's not fun for you, why in the world would you continue to put yourself in that situation? It doesn't make any sense. It would be dumb to remain in that situation.
But it's not playful attacks anymore. That's the difference.
Well, now it's fine. And now it doesn't harm. You know,
I got pissed off the other day because the comment about this show in the GC, I was like, oh, I was at the verge of leaving.
Well, that is,
and
that
I know I overreact to a lot of things, but it pissed me off.
Well, see, I'm glad I'm out of it because I didn't see it.
So here's the thing. There, part of that is Cheryl, And
right, exactly.
So Cheryl feels left out.
Yeah.
And she is going to attack anything that's new or anything that doesn't put money in her pocket or yeah. anything where she doesn't have, like, you know, everything is going to be horrible and awful and bad
right.
if she doesn't have her hand in it.
Right.
And so the lines get blurry because Cheryl's attacks are funny.
Exactly.
And but then other people adopt that
totally.
And they and there is sadness to Cheryl's attacks
it's
as well.
Bullying.
Yeah, and then it becomes bullying.
It is.
I think this is something that I've told to Debbie before, but something that you can attest to. Mm-hmm. The Yeast Radio crowd used to really hate me.
That's true.
And so, and this was when I had such a thin skin. Mm. And so it really hurt my feelings. And it just hurt. And mm-hmm. then when I did Big Brother, that really helped me develop a thick skin because you're getting attacked by, you know, on a global scale.
Right.
And so I developed thick skin after that. So it's very easy for me to compartmentalize. So when they talk shit about Pod Save the Queens, I just kind of think, look, I've been in this game long enough to know if a show is good or if a show is not good. And right. I know this show is good.
But if the show is bad, that's fine. But listen to it first. Don't just say it shit. Obviously, Cheryl's not listening and those other people don't listen. That's what pisses me off. Because like you create something.
It wouldn't be up there, Allie, anyways, for a few different reasons. The first reason is
there's no phone calls. That's the main.
There are no phone calls.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Call the queen. Ask her if she wants an abortion.
Look, when I listen to a show on Sunday, I want phone calls, and there's a niche for that. And so I've always been into the phone calls, but everything has its place, right? And then I also think that anything that Madge does now is going to get criticized from a faction of her old audience because they feel spurned by Madge's breakup with them.
But see, that's what's so weird. Like, I don't get why anybody, I just.
It makes no sense to me.
Now I understand with that, because I do think like what you said before, Madge, how it was an overreaction on your part. And then you went back and figured out reasons to have the disconnection in a sense. But people with this show or with your show, people enjoy. Like I used to, back when I was a listener, when I'd make like art, I don't know if you ever used any of it, but I would like send you messages, I think, of like something I worked on. You with like a fat old handmaiden. I remember I did that. People like your admiration on something related to the show. And I think they don't get that now. And that, you know,
well,
some people,
you know,
they
what?
Bother
I,
some.
I gave up. My whole audience. Not many people would do that. I gave up my whole audience on a matter of principle because I was tired of that shit. And it would have been much easier and maybe arguably certainly more financially smarter to just go along with it and just say, I'm going to keep my audience. I'm not going to piss them off. I'm just going to reinforce everything they want. Most entertainers do that. They keep their audience, and I'm insane for not doing it. But I know that I do the right thing for myself and for my art. Because I will, and I feel so much freer now. And the few people that did stick with me, they're real. And that's why I never give that telegram out in paper, because it's like, finally, like, I have people that get it, and not that they get it, because that sounds so elitist, but...
But they'll allow you to evolve.
And I can
evolve,
be myself.
People's shows evolves.
I'm not myself. Well, okay, so this plays directly into what happened the other night. Reagan, we were making a joke about Susan Collins. Okay, well, not even about her, but just about how she talked. I don't remember what we were saying,
we were impersonating her voice.
Yeah.
I'm Susan Collins.
Susan Collins. Well, half this CSM, I don't know, said something, then like three or four other people said, oh, she's some person. She is disabled. And then I really didn't know she's disabled.
I didn't know either.
But see, like, there's no BS.
That's
there's
not
nothing
a disabled,
out there
that's
that
not
she
a disability.
Really
disabled. My cousin Phil has the same thing. It's a disorder, but to call it a disability because you have a shaky voice.
Well, anyway, Mo, I wanted to broach this conversation with Debbie tonight after we had it, where I wanted to, like, seriously ask a question.
Have a conversation.
About ethical performance, kind of like the cultural appropriation conversation we had at the beginning of the show, because they're important conversations. They're uncomfortable, but important to have, where if you have somebody like Susan Collins, and people in politics are the subject of satire. People do impersonations of politicians all the time.
All the time.
So if you do a Susan Collins impersonation, are you not allowed to have a wavy voice? And if you pretend like she doesn't, then is like it's the colorblind approach. You're acting like the disability isn't there.
Right.
And so isn't that in itself disability shaming?
So the next time they do Miracle Worker, she can say anything.
My God, you have the Disney Channel, the Disney Network thing. Do you have that?
No, she doesn't. But I just wanted to say,
this is good. You should watch it because they have shorts. I love the animated shorts they do on there, and they'll have like animators from Pixar come on and they'll do a short for something they love. They have an animated short of an and it's basically about a camp counselor who goes on a boat who has a student or whatever, and he takes the girl on the boat and she's having a rush time. She's autistic, and they don't hide her autism. She's kind of maybe, you know, what I would call retarded, where she's doing like this, but it's not making fun of her. She has this phone where she plays the same ring over and over again. It's about like him interacting with this autistic girl, but she is portrayed absolutely as an autistic person would be in real life. They're not hiding any of it, but it's completely respectful. And that makes sense to me. It's an evolution of this. Where you don't ignore it, you can be respectful and not ignore it at the same time. You can be comedic too.
It's the attention behind it also, obviously, the attention. But to go back what Reagan says and to pull it, what you were talking about. So Reagan wanted to bring it up the night before. Some people were still in the chat. So I told Reagan, we'll discuss this offline. And the reason I did that is because I'm with this entity. Okay, how I separated it. I've decided to go the Max and Stacey route.
Of course. Well, it's financially, it makes sense.
And see, that's what is so insane about it. It's the exact opposite. But and I would rather make money off both of half and half and not.
I don't begrudge you for that for a second.
Deborah, here's my issue, though. My issue, and it's not so much, it's not like a personal issue with you, but it's something for you to think about. I get where you're coming from. It's kind of like you've monetized this. It's, you know, this is an audience that you're cultivating right now, and you're working so hard at doing that. And in fairness to you, you didn't know what direction I wanted to take the conversation, but I don't think that you do your audience a disservice by having a serious, thoughtful conversation about that topic and letting them chime in and letting them be a part of the conversation. Now, if I were coming into it saying, like, from a defensive posture, like, no, we should be able to say whatever, like, you hear some people who use the word retarded, and then somebody will say, look, you know, I have a son who has, you know, Asperger's or something, please don't say that around me. And they'll say, I'm going to continue to say, you know, and they dig their heels in the ground. Yeah, that's not productive. Mm. But I was really coming from a place of like, let's have an earnest conversation
I feel like it, but see, at this is how I look at it too. Obviously, it's just, they're just coming to watch the video game. You know what I'm saying? Like that, it gets lost. Like, I feel like you, like I've told you a million times, your stuff is very valuable, but like on a gaming section, some 13-year-old kid's not going to care.
That's the sad thing about it.
It's Deborah's show. You know? She gets to curate it.
Well, no. I don't like it. Like, no, I don't want it to sound like that. But
no, I get it. It doesn't need to be that cerebral when we're playing Fortnite.
Well, just like how like you edit this show and you'll take out stuff that just, it doesn't make sense to throw it into the thing.
No, I get it.
I think it's fun when we have conversations and people love that in the thing, but I just feel like it gets lost when it's like a 12-year-old, like that one kid that we played with for the listener. Like, I don't think he cares.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you know, there's probably like a better place to have that conversation. I just didn't want you to, because your audience isn't just 12-year-olds. You know, you have a lot of people.
Oh, it's mixed. It's totally mixed.
I think that they could handle that conversation, but I also
well,
think
some can't, obviously.
Because when we were doing the impersonations, that wasn't a conversation, right? Like, we were doing the impersonations. They called us out on. And there's my friend Dustin Goltz, who is a professor at DePaul University. We got our PhD at ASU together. He has this really fantastic essay where he talks about what he calls critical paralysis. And critical paralysis is tied to something that we were talking about in terms of like cancel culture or the gotcha moment, where you see something where you say, you shouldn't do that. No. We shouldn't even have a conversation with it. Even having the conversation is offensive. It's not my place to teach you anything. So what happens is any type of productive conversation is shut down. It's paralyzed by somebody saying, you shouldn't do that. And I don't necessarily think that anybody in particular has the market on ethics. You know, ethics are about a conversation that people have, and you tease those issues out. So I felt like it was an oversimplification for the people in the chat to be like, no, you know, like, you know, I'm all, there's a difference between talking about politics and disability shaming, when I think it was a mischaracterization.
So what happened? You were doing this. I wasn't there, obviously, but you were doing the Susan Collins impersonation. Somebody shamed you for being, you know, anti whatever.
And no, disability. That's not funny. Disability. She's shaming. Disabled.
So instead of hashing out the conversation, Deborah basically shut it down and said, we're going to move on.
Well, not that night. That was a different night.
So what ended up happening was
both Googled.
Yeah, we both Googled. Like, I was like, because honestly, and this is just, you know, part of my evolution, but my immediate response is to go into
you saved it. You instantly said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so but before that, my impulse is to get into a defensive posture and be like, oh, you think you're being so smart about critical cultural, you know, like I want to get defensive, but then I take a breath and I'm like, hold on, let me think about this more rationally. And so when I Googled it and saw like she does have a disability, at first I was like, oh my gosh, I just thought she talked oddly, you know, like I really didn't know that she had a disability. And Deborah said the same thing, and we just kind of left it there.
Yeah.
And I think that was the right way to handle the situation in that moment, because we needed time to digest the situation ourselves.
But it still pulls it into a weird way to go, because it was never really, it was just for fun towards the game. I don't even think we were talking about Susan to be... it was very weird. I know it probably stuck to a game level, and it was so odd to pull it that far in, which I totally agree. You know,
look, none of us. Here's the bottom line to me, because like I did know it was a disability because my cousin has the same thing, but I did made fun of her anyway and made fun of her voice and the way she talks, knowing that. But for me, the issue is, I would not be making fun of her or her voice or anything if she wasn't a fucking hypocritical cunt who screws over the entire country by trying to take away people's health care and always playing different sides and never votes the right way. And she's completely opportunistic and horrible, which is why I attack her. And yes, I do attack her for that. Is that wrong? Maybe. I don't fucking know.
It's funny because what's funny, okay, because like really, I was hyped up on caffeine the other night, and I'm throwing jib jabs at Rumor Willis looking like a potato head. I mean, you know, I'm sure that can go back somewhere and be like, oh, you know, I liked you before, well, but you making fun of how someone looks.
Any ad hominem, you can make the argument, and it's something that I continuously work on, and I've gotten a lot better in my 44 years with it. But my impulse is to always attack appearance or go for low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. And I've had to remind myself...
Vegetable. Rumor Willis is a potato.
Breathe before you respond. Focus on the content of their idea and not what they look like or anything superficial like that. But there is a comic who says, and I love this, that I won't go ad hominem, But the minute that you do something that is completely unethical or you advocate on behalf of terrible things, then you don't get the benefit of no ad hominem attacks.
Well, I've
like
noticed,
a Mitch McConnell or somebody like that. Fuck that.
It's punching up, though, too.
Well,
really.
I've noticed, like, I don't give a shit about the punching up thing. See, I having gone to this comedy school so recently, I've seen how they wreck these young kids and teach them about punching down and all these unwritten rules of comedy. But I forgot what I was going to say. Sorry.
Oh, hey, Matt.
If it's funny, it's funny.
Are you recording this by any chance?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that you should, if Deborah is okay with it, this is such an interesting conversation that we're having. Mm-hmm. Would you post this as an episode of Yeast Radio? I think it's a really fascinating conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter with me. I mean, I've talked.
Because I've really,
really.
since the whole, this is such a nuanced conversation. Since Debbie and I had that experience with the so-called disability shaming, I've wanted to have this conversation, and I just think it's important.
So that, Emma, yes, I'll do that. But this is what I forgot that I was trying to say is that, you know how, like, this is what in the sort of this, I see so much of this, it's kind of related to what you're talking about, where like people shut down each other's ideas without having to, what was the word you used, where you freeze dissent or something? You just
critical paralysis.
Critical paralysis. So something similar to me that I notice a lot, like I see a lot of really good criticism from people, like you'll talk about, a good example is Glenn Greenwald. A good example is Matt Taibbi and Jimmy Dore. And you'll see so many people, they will not criticize the idea. As soon as you say who said it, they criticize the person and they avoid criticizing the idea. And the same thing was that letter. A really great example of this is that letter about cancel culture that was in, I forget what, The New Yorker or something, or Harper's Bazaar, I think. Remember that letter?
Yeah, Harper's.
And all this, it was a long paper again that all these people had written against what they felt was cancel culture. And when people argued about it, nine times out of ten, their argument was against the signatories and not about the content, the ideas. And all I'm saying is talk about the ideas, forget about the person who's saying it. And that's something that I see a lot lately, is this pattern of you don't have to attack the ideas if you can attack the person, which is much easier. And they did that to Bernie, too.
It's an argumentation fallacy, right? Mm-hmm.
Attacking ideas are boring, though. Attacking the person is interesting. It gets likes and love.
It's also a lot harder. Like people with Bernie, they would never criticize like his ideas about socialized medicine, healthcare. They just say, oh, he's a misogynist because of this. Yeah.
Now, interestingly, that concept that I talked about from Dusty, which is critical paralysis, he had to rename as critical frustration because critical paralysis was, seriously, I'm not joking, was critiqued as ableist language. And before, when I was talking about, talking about Deborah speaking about overcorrections, I think that's an overcorrection. I there's a big difference between using gay to mean stupid when gay also represents a community of marginalized people, and using the term paralysis as a metaphor for no longer moving in a conversation.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. Yeah. Like the master and slave language has been removed from programming. Cause like it's a common thing when you have a master, in programming
hard drive systems
or a slave, hard driver, but in coding also, and they've removed that. They've changed it to, I don't know what, but I don't know. I get nervous when people change language. It's cause it always reminds me of Orwell, and I don't know. Just there's so much weird stuff going on. But I'm so glad that Trump is over, because I feel like this whole thing that was weird and my disconnect with the audience, a lot of it was directly tied to Trump in ways, and that whole election and the way people changed and changed teams and changed tribes and dug their heels in on tribes and moved around and changed. And in ways that I don't think I fully understand, that now that Trump is gone, maybe I'm hoping I'll be able to see it more clearly and have better discussions about it, because I don't really know what happened, but something, there was a seismic shift that day Trump won the election. And that's when like my friction with Cheryl started there. And it really did. I mean, most of my, and we're still friends, personally in a way, but not on the show. And something happened there where we had this seismic shift to the point where it just came, I can't work with this person anymore. Because I felt her dogma and my dogma just were just couldn't work together. And I don't even know how to explain it better, but it's just something weird happened. The same thing with the audience and those little, you know, side conversation Cheryl has with the other people. You know, she takes time and she really gets to know people in the audience and in the community in ways that I don't. And I don't know what the fuck happened, but it was weird.
So kill Cheryl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous about putting this on Yeast Radio for gonna, because some of that was that, but who gives a shit, right?
Well, you can edit what you want.
Yeah, you just edit
in and out. Yeah, but the thing is that I, you know, I was thinking about that too when you were talking about Cheryl. It's like, do I really want to now, you know, the parts where we talked about Cheryl, should we include that? But then I think Cheryl is the last person to pull up, you know, like she is the first person to go for the jugular with everybody else. And I love Cheryl, you know, like I think that she, and I had to tell you that she has written me emails a couple of times, you know, behind the scenes and said, hey, you know, I don't, you know, I just want to make sure that I'm not going too far or that, you know, like I'm not truly offending you. And so I know that she cares and I know that she has a heart and I know that she, you know, that, and I said to her in response, I'm like, no, this is what I love about you. You know, it's you, I love that, but I can see I've been on the end of it where it just felt like a lot of negativity and I just was hurt by it. So I could see what you're saying, Madge, where...
especially when it's your ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when people are trying to like,
that's,
you know,
exactly right.
Stab holes into the, you know, the hole.
It's
of the
a, it's a little bit like Agent Smith in the Matrix, right? And Cheryl has found ways to multiply, and we have a bunch of Cheryls now, and there are things that are glorious about that that I love, because that sense of humor I just think is so biting and hilarious, but. I'm sure when it's all focused on one person and you're on the receiving end of that laser beam, that it burns and it's difficult.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Oops. Especially when you have in your mind a good idea or something you want to bring to the table and then someone instantly shuts it down before even, and I understand that.
There are several examples of that in my show.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is part of the shtick too. I mean, it is part of the shtick to be a misanthrope and to shut all of that stuff down. There's humor in that. I mean, I do think it's, I think it's funny. I think it's funny, but I get where it could also, there's a part of it that's very stifling. Yeah. And
there's humor, but it's kind of like if Robin Quivers took over Howard Stern's show, it's not going to happen. That's the way I felt.
And you know, there was walls before in a sense that it was more like,
they fell
Oh God, no! The Rosie O'Donnell used to do these little variety. It was like a variety show in the past. You used to do a lot more editing. Really, you'd have conversations, and then there'd be a cut, and then Cheryl. I could be well. This is different when Cheryl would do phone calls.
Well, the advice that I get
T-Mobile, like the T-Mobile call. Yeah.
I didn't know you had her call.
The advice that I gave to Debbie is the advice that I wish I would have given to you, but I didn't. I really didn't. I thought part of the shtick was you just complaining and like you were over it. I didn't realize how much you had really taken it to heart. But I could tell that Debbie was kind of going in that direction too. And I was like, no, listen, if you want to do other stuff, but keep the Sunday show as well. But you know, you can branch out in other ways, and but you've cultivated such a great audience doing the Sunday shows, and I wish that was the road that you would have taken, where you would have continued to do. And Debbie's even coming up with new boundaries, right? Like now she's like, okay, I'll do a Sunday show twice a month, and because right now, you know, I'm more into the YouTube stuff and I'm more into cultivating this audience, and I wish you would have
no see I don't regret that at all. To me, it's like, the best, you leave something when it's good, not you don't run it into the ground. And for me, like, it was much more challenging for me to end that and be like, what the fuck am I going to do now, than it would have been to stay and do what's easier, more convenient, and more lucrative. No, I don't regret it at all. I really
but
don't.
You know yourself. I mean, but you, and, yeah. And
I do want to figure it out, though. I do want to understand, because to me, it's more than anything, more than the control issues, that there was something political at the root of it. And that's what I want to understand. And I don't.
And you had a Phoenix moment.
A what?
A Phoenix moment. You burned, you know what I'm saying? You burned it down and started back. And that's fine.
Oh, okay.
You know, at the end of the day, sometimes it's match.
You have to step away. I mean, Look at how many times I've stepped away from podcasting. And you just needed to step away. You'd been doing it really with no break for such a long time.
When I listened to, I create the show ultimately for me. It's always for me. I create the show that I want to listen to. After Tammy died, I listened to the last couple shows that we did, and I thought, this is amazing what happened. I documented something so well. I don't even know if anybody noticed it, but her decline is so well documented and, to, in my mind, very artistic and clear and lucid and innovative and yet respectful, despite all the comedic wrappings, that I'm very proud of that. Very proud of that. And I couldn't have done that had I stayed on this shtick with phone calls and abortion, you know, phone calls.
Well, obviously.
And that's what matters in the end, is what I think.
Well, and you pulled it back to more of an original, you know.
I mean, it's life. What happened was real life. That's how my show started out. And it's,
but see, it's, I think it didn't come through. I don't think that shows, you're able to see from a different perspective, but from the audience member, just like with Reagan, you don't know what's character and what's not. So like, I have a conversation, remember, I thought it was Lady Bunny. You know, I texted you, remember that? I was like, oh, this is Lady Bunny, isn't it? I figured it out, you know?
Lady Bunny called me. She's like, who is that person that did that? She's like, she called me, I can't believe a woman did that tampon unboxing with the Barbie doll. That was disgusting.
Oh, that was so good.
I said, no, that was a guy. She's like, was that a sick queen? I knew it was a sick queen.
I thought Tammy was a woman as well. The big takeaway of this conversation for me is just tying everything together is that people evolve. I mean, that's part of life. And especially it's going to reflect in their artistry. There's a reason why you look at painters who go through different periods and you did what you had to do, because you couldn't stay in the same rut that you were in. And I get the backlash of the audience initially, but now I think we've come to a point where, okay, this is the reality of the situation now. And now we have somebody who is creating new art, and it needs to be kind of like, okay, let's stop the attacks and let people kind of cultivate wherever they're at right now. And like, whatever art they want to make.
If there's attacks, I don't know about them. And that's that. All that tells me is that everything I did worked, because I'm free. I don't see any attacks. I used to. When I was on Facebook, I would see hate. I would see people that really were in the show because they love Cheryl and they have to support attack me. And all that's gone now. I don't see it anymore. That's all I wanted to achieve, and I've achieved it. And I'm able to even be on Facebook and still not see that stuff.
And some people, when it had its second coming, in a sense, found the show through Cheryl because of the music video. Because there's a lot of people like that have transitioned over to my stuff, like Wesley. Wesley's a good example. Mm-hmm. He found the show through Walls Fall Out, and so they only can see it from that perspective, where it became it's your show, but it's like, it's, you're not going to have Madge without Cheryl. It's like not having Howard without Robin.
Well, I wouldn't say only have that perspective. That's their original perspective. It's certainly within the realm of possibility that they could change perspective and get a wider one. And that's I imagine why they would want to stay in.
A wider one.
I get shocked when I'll bring up Andy. I had a discussion on my show with Cheryl about Andy, and half the people there are like, who's Andy?
Right.
And it's like, what? That, it just is mind blowing to me, because I'm a long time listener, you know.
Anyway, okay, I need to go. I need to eat.
Yeah, good conversation, though.
Good talk. Send me your good files. Times. I'll do it tomorrow.
Okay, I already sent mine.
Right. Oh, well, you know, the internet's a little different here. I'll have to, you know.
All right, see ya.
Bye, honey.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Drink your Popeyes. Push.
That's too bad. Mm-hmm. That's no good.